The Around the NFL Podcast is in secret contract negotiations with MVP.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Thursday show. Last show of the quote-unquote quiet period for the Around the NFL Podcast. It's time to crank, starting Monday morning, Mark. Get ready.
The quiet period could not be any less or any more over than it is right now. The last 24 hours have been utterly mad.
Let's focus on what really counts, though. Tonight, in Culver City, California.
Prime time.
It is the playoffs, semifinals, and if we advance, the championship game for our softball league and our team, the Shield. And it's been, as we talked about last week on the show, an extremely trying season for me, Skipper, and a very exciting season for the Rook, I call him, Pepper Spray, Greg, who's given us enthusiasm, a trying season on an even more serious level for Chris Wessling, playing through the Big C. Are you kidding me?
Well, you did it. You had that little C.
I had little C. I fought through that. But I thought, you know, with the big games tonight, if we advance, we a doubleheader, and then we defend the title, hopefully, open it up to questions. Real quick, presser. We'll start with you, Mark. Go ahead.
Well, if you do win this first playoff game and you have to play another round, another whole game after that, are you concerned about the consistency of this team being able to do that two games in a row?
I'll defer to Greg on this one, who's also sitting with me at the dais.
Wow, I'm taking questions now. I think this is a team that likes pressure, that's going to step up. And you get to a bigger game, I think the balls get bigger.
Anybody else? Questions?
Good athletes speak.
Questions. Go ahead.
Second question. There's no other journalists in the room who aren't on the team. I would ask you this, Dan, if this goes well,
yes,
or if it goes particularly poorly, is this the end of your run as manager?
It's very possible. It's a good question. Thanks for asking. Very possible that this is the end for me, one way or the other. If the effort levels off, if people show up drunk or late, it could push me out the door. If we win and we have two titles in 2 years, then it's the old, what else do I have to prove? So there's a lot. I thought Wes he put it very well last week, where there's an uneasy mix of people that are there just to have fun and who cares, get drunk, you know, kind of pay attention to the game, and the people that really want to win.
And have fun.
And that has led to something of a rift, culminating with, I don't know if cameras caught it, I had an exchange with our pitcher late in last week's game that was not pleasant. We worked it out after the game, but we worked through it. But it's been a tough year. Got time for one more.
I've got a statement, not a question.
Statement, Chris Wessling, also at the dais.
I'm changing something up. I am coaching the bases tonight. We won the tournament last year with base running. We go first to third on the Shield. We do not stop at second base. We go first to third. We cause the other team to throw the ball around. We take extra bases, and then we steal the game.
Mm. Any concern? I'll have a question. Any concern that about 40% of our team doesn't know the basics of running bases, cutting bases, where to run after they get to one place, whether they can run when the ball's caught, or like when to run? Any concerns about that?
There is a concern. That's why I'm going to be right by the first base bag telling them, hey, look, do you see how much farther the right fielder is from third base than the left fielder? Mm. If the ball's hit the left field, you're going to stop at second. If the ball's hit the right field, you're standing up on third base easily.
We've got a lot going for us. You know, team speed isn't the first thing that popped
at the top of the list.
Popped to my mind. But some people.
I'm foregoing the pinch runner tonight. I'm going first to third. Mm.
Something
actually,
else you
I'm
have.
Getting, I love it.
Hey, hang on a second.
I'm going second out of the box.
Let's get rid
of those force outs. If you're a male player, you are on second base every time. Force outs will not happen.
What about the idea, Wes, that in your compromised state on some level right now, we want to make sure we get two full games out of you? Do we want you going first to third on a bouncer up the middle when it might cost us having you in the biggest point of the game in the final?
Look, you got to go hard. There's only one way to play when the games matter like this. What am I going to do, save it for August, I'll be having surgery.
This is why it's hard.
It's leadership.
To be a manager, and that's why it's great to have Chris Wessling on the team.
Absolutely. I have one as an outsider, as a deep outsider.
You coming to the game tonight?
I'm coming to both of them because you're going to win the first one for sure, and I think you'll win the second. But my biggest concern with this team, and it's lingering from last year, although you got over this issue, is a deep alcohol and substance abuse problems with many people on the roster. I'd say a third of the roster, and most of them female.
It's a team strength.
A lot of females with alcohol substance abuse issues on this team. Can we get over that?
We have no testing methods in our league. As long as all this happens after the game, we'll be okay. So I fully expect us to advance out of the semifinal round. In fact, I'll be bitterly disappointed if we don't do that. The finals, listen, the team that we would play in the finals beat us by 15 runs last week. So we got an uphill climb, but I don't count out the Shield. We didn't last year, and we hoisted the trophy.
Yeah, this is like, if we're looking for an NFL comparison, maybe the Barry Switzer Cowboys. Like, a lot of what's going on with those teams. Yeah. But in the end, they were just kind of too talented, and they put it together because they love the big stage.
We have a better chance this year. If you remember last year on this very podcast, I counted us out. I said that the number one seed was just flat out way better than us.
Yeah. Any given Thursday is what they say. Anyway, today's show. I don't know. My focus isn't totally with the show. I'm thinking about the big game tonight. But we're going to do our best because we're professionals, and we'll talk about what's going on across the NFL now that many teams, all teams, everybody's in camp now, right? It's a full deck now, right?
There's still some teams showing up.
Get to camp.
Come on, Lions.
Are you kidding me? Hey, Lions, you want to go up higher in the pain rankings? Get to camp and show me you give a crap.
In fairness, there are league rules. You can only show up a certain amount of days before your first preseason game. So the teams that have not shown up generally are the ones that happen to be starting that week one of the preseason later. They still show up as early.
It's a bad look for the Lions, no doubt about it. It's kind of an extra day in there.
It's kind of unfair, though. I mean, why the Cowboys and the Cardinals get two extra weeks of, you know, practice compared to the Lions?
It's unfair to play in the Hall of Fame game. Another chance for injuries.
How about, you know, get the team together, Matty Stafford, and, you know, some park in Auburn Hills. Just throw the ball around.
Literally league rules.
Do a couple of wind sprints.
What can they do?
No, this is on their own time.
Okay.
On their own time, on their own dime.
4-12.
We're going to talk about some bad news in Baltimore. We're going to talk about, oh boy, it's that time of year where we already, I'm not saying they're already, you know, molten lava down there in the underpants area, but we are looking ahead, spinning forward to see who could have some hot butt. Greg's least favorite around the NFL podcast.
A lot of candidates already.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not just me that it's the least favorite. I think a lot of right-minded listeners share my distaste for this sound effect and just the phrase hot butt
with a Z.
If that guy was actually being, you know, singed, I would feel bad, but it's clearly just play acting.
That's actually not true. That's one of our 7-month employees that I tricked.
It's one of our old producers.
I said, hey, do you want to come up and be on the show? We took him to a basement and melted his butt.
Sounds illegal.
Anyway,
grounds for termination.
That's today's show, and we're very lucky and excited to have behind the glass Moonlighting. She is Sheck's producer, at least right now. but today she's with us. She is the great Emma VP.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's very good to have
you. It's our pleasure.
You notice like the fun vibe in here? It's football, but it's friendship.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that.
Yeah.
Emma told me that she is going to finally reveal publicly her favorite member of the show. I mean, I know privately who it is, and I agree with her decision, but that's going to go live on the air today.
Yeah, I've said it to you, Mark, actually, a couple times.
Nice tease.
Yeah.
Nice tease.
Sorry.
All right, let's do some news, Emma.
Hey, heroes. Hope you don't mind me dropping in on the show. I just wanted to say I miss you guys, sending all the love from Utah. Oh, yeah, Dan, let's do some news.
Ooh, my girl. The great one woman Mount Rushmore, La Cid.
No money.
Yeah, you want to see a room full of heroes' faces glow like little children at getting ice cream. I mean, this room was happy to hear that sound drop out of nowhere.
I was surprised. I didn't know it was coming.
Yeah, it's great to hear Cid and everything going well with her. But now I don't want to take us straight from that high, but we got to go a little higher. Got to climb the tree, scale a few branches. We're headed into the Raven's Nest. I mean, this is the worst news, basically, for the Ravens' nest. It's when the quarterbacks hurt, and that's the situation we got here. Joe Flacco will miss the first week of Baltimore's camp, preparing to miss 3 to 6 weeks with a disc issue in his back. Rap Sheet and Tom Pelissero both reported. You look at the timetable there. That's 6 weeks maximum, which would cost him regular season time, potentially. Chris Wessling, we'll start with you on this one. Flacco has been, with the exception of that ACL injury, a very durable quarterback. But the last thing you ever want to hear with any professional athlete is back and disc, and that's something that haunts you. How concerned should the Ravens be?
Slightly. 3 to 6 weeks is a pretty wide range. John Harbaugh pretty much downplayed the injury. Who knows? It could only take a week or two before he's feeling better. So I think this is a wait-and-see situation.
Anytime you have a back injury and it's Joe Flacco and your primary backup is Ryan Mallett, I think it's very concerning. I mean, they guys like Flacco, they do everything they can to stay on the practice field. He's about as durable as it comes. So usually when they're downplaying this, I'm not believing it in general, especially at this time of year.
And Colin Kaepernick now is a name that's floated. You said Ryan Mallett is in line to be the number one quarterback right now, which is something that cannot happen in 2017 NFL. So naturally, Colin Kaepernick, still a free agent, has the ties to a Harbaugh brother when he had his glory days with Jim Harbaugh in San Francisco. John Harbaugh, the coach of the Ravens, spoke about the idea of Colin Kaepernick joining the Ravens' nest.
You know, I've known Colin really, you know, through my brother for many years. And we've talked and then got to know him really well when they scrimmaged here. And he and I have been talking, you know, throughout the summer a number of times. Hmm. We've had some great conversations on the phone. I mean, it's really been a pleasure to talk to him and get to know him. And, you know, I like history and politics and stuff, too. So, you know, we've had some debates and it's been fun. And he's a great guy. And he's a guy right now that's being talked about. We'll just see what happens with that. I think that's it'll all be speculation right now. But I think he's a really good football player. And as I said at the owners' meetings, I do believe he'll be playing in the National Football League this year.
If John Harbaugh's telling the truth, that he believes Colin Kaepernick's a really good football player, if he has conversations, has a good relationship with him, his brother likes him, Mark, why shouldn't he be on the Ravens right now?
I think that this has become the overtly most obvious landing spot for Colin Kaepernick. And you have to think the way coaches operate is it's relationships. It's relationships with players. You want to bring someone in at the quarterback position that you know, that you trust, and there's built-in trust with the Harbaugh brothers and Kaepernick. And John Harbaugh, I agree what he said also about politics and history, that he is the right kind of coach. He is a curious guy that I think would look at whatever you want to say about Kaepernick's worldview, which I think has been overtly slammed considering he does a ton of charity work and he really is an interesting guy, not some sort of pariah, that John Harbaugh fits with Kaepernick. And also, gives you a chance to upgrade over Ryan Mallett. I mean, you have to address that position. That season is over if it goes to Ryan Mallett.
Major upgrade over Ryan Mallett. And who was calling the plays when Colin Kaepernick was going to the Super Bowl?
One of Mark Sessler's best friends, Greg Roman.
Who is now on the Ravens coaching staff. Managing the run game, really. I think this makes a ton of sense. If, as Greg said, it's more than the Flacco's injury is more than the Ravens are letting on, you have to get Kaepernick in there. You can't go through a season with Ryan Mallett.
Well, and you also there's a risk of re-injuring it. Yeah, maybe he's back on the field in a couple weeks, but what about when he starts taking hits? The biggest
somebody shoot that Raven.
Right, get out of here. The biggest reveal
in the nest
in that Harbaugh talk was that he's talked to Kaepernick multiple times this offseason. Mm-hmm. That makes me wonder if they've kind of already talked about, hey, if you still haven't found a starting job that you really are looking for, or, you know, we'll see how things are looking like mid to late August. Maybe Kaepernick is kind of looking for a starting job. Hey, maybe it's something where we're not happy with our quarterbacks. That's a signing that could happen down the line. I thought it was interesting. One of the Ravens reporters pointed out, Harbaugh never talks about prospective free agents. So the fact that he went on and on about Kaepernick, I think, indicates that he could be a Raven pretty soon.
Everybody in the studio, Emma behind the glass, all the listeners, take a second. Can you picture Colin Kaepernick in a Ravens uniform? I can. Can't you see it? It makes sense. You can picture him on the sideline with the wool cap on.
I mean, in a sense, his incompletion at the end of that Super Bowl helped the Ravens win a Super Bowl title, so he's already beloved inside the building.
The least they can do.
Moving on, other Ravens nest news. Kenneth Dixon, the running back who suffered the meniscus tear, they didn't think it was going to be that bad an issue, but it turns out the second second-year running back is expected to miss the entire 2017 season. He underwent surgery to repair his medial meniscus on Tuesday, Rap Sheet reported. Harbaugh confirmed Wednesday that Dixon is done for the year. Wes, what does this mean for the Ravens' depth chart at halfback?
Well, he was set to miss the first four games already with a suspension, but he not only was going to compliment Terrence West, he's also a good receiver, so he's insurance for Danny Woodhead. He's probably their most versatile running back, and John Harbaugh said early this offseason he can be one of the top backs in the league. That's the kind of potential he had, but he's got to stay healthy, and last season he had a hard time staying healthy too. I think you'll see the Ravens at some point go get another running back.
Terrence West and Danny Woodhead coming off a torn ACL is not a good backfield. This has been a very unlucky team when it comes to injuries, and they're starting off this season that way.
The running game killed them last year. Well, their lack of faith in their own running game killed them last year.
You know, this is all trending towards
Greg Roman, assistant coach of the year.
It's all trending towards a lot of 18 to 17 wins with my boy Justin Tucker, 6 for 6. Just get inside the 50-yard line and you're flying.
I think these games will be more like 6-3.
This was 1972. They'd be in good shape.
Finally, in the Ravens' nest, John Urschel, the guard, just 26 years old.
I'm going to shoot this bird with a bow and arrow.
Can you do that? Do you have that ability?
Yes, I do.
Good. He was going to compete for a starting job, but instead
they taught you that at that camp you love. Going
That's right,
through,
right. Bow and arrow, archery from long range. I can take anything out. And
I hated
anything.
Archery.
I loved archery
just
so much.
Blisters,
I was good at
and it's
archery.
Like, what
really?
There was always the crazy kid that was, you know, not aiming at the target and potentially could have put one in somebody's throat.
I view it as an equalizer.
Wasn't Gina Davis like some unreal archer?
She was.
Yeah.
She is, probably.
Is, yeah.
Maybe she's declined a little bit. Gradual decline for Gina Davis in archery. Anyway, a doctoral candidate in mathematics at MIT. John Urschel, smart guy, very good at chess. Godspeed, Johnny boy.
Yeah, RIP, all those children he assassinated in that NFL commercial where he takes down 50 in chess at one time.
Let's hop out of the Ravens' nest, please. For the love of God. Moving on. Hey, Mike Glennon is a starting quarterback. You would think that this wouldn't need to be announced considering he got almost $19 million in guaranteed money in his last free agent deal. But, of course, with the Mitch Trubisky shocker on draft day, some people thought maybe Mike might not even start. However, Bears general manager Ryan Pace said Wednesday via the Chicago Tribune that Mike Glennon is our starting quarterback. But Greg Rosenthal, for how long?
I think it's going to be for a long time because, A, I believe Mike Glennon's pretty good, going to be better than people think. And then, B, Trubisky doesn't seem like a guy that's going to be ready. And we haven't heard much about Trubisky. The Bears are really off the radar as much as an organization as I can ever remember. Like last year at this time, we're hearing a lot of, how did Jared Goff look in the offseason? Like for all we know, Trubisky doesn't look like he's ready, and that's why they're so confident we don't even need a competition right now. Why even put that out there?
Yeah, I think when you see the updates from off-season practices that, look, we're happy with Trubisky. He knows how to run a huddle now. Like, that's how he had to learn how to run a huddle. So he's way behind the eight ball. And it's not just that Ryan Pace said unequivocally that Mike Glennon is a starter. The other takeaway from this is that Trubisky's behind Mark Sanchez.
Right.
He's not even number two on the depth chart.
Is he, though, really?
Sanchez is entering camp as a number two quarterback, and it wouldn't surprise me if he leaves camp as the number two.
You didn't answer me, by the way, Greg. Well, how long will Mike Glennon be the starting quarterback?
I'm going to say 13 games.
Okay, one of those deals.
Yeah, that they'll wait. Even if they're not having a good season, they're going to wait till the end to just give Trubisky.
A little 4-9, yeah. He's starting.
They'll want to see a start or two to see what their plans are for next season.
In other quarterback news, yeah, boy, Mark Sessler, Cody Kessler will start with the first team started with the first team offense for the Browns on Thursday. Hugh Jackson had confirmed this, saying Cody Kessler will walk out there first, Hugh said, according to the Plain Dealer. He deserves a chance to walk out there first. Does he deserve it? Does he?
It's a very tedious aspect to the start of training camp where there's all these breathless reports about which of, in these so-called quarterback battles where there's clearly no clear starter or maybe even anyone of starting caliber talent, that so-and-so is going to get the first snaps, but then the next comment is we're going to rotate. And all they're doing is rotating it so far. Kessler and DeShone Kizer and it's Brock Osweiler Greg's cut candidate who's taking snaps with the twos so far.
And, Mark, I think you put it well in your write-up on NFL.com. You know, Brock Osweiler in the mix, obviously. You wouldn't be surprised to see Osweiler starting week one or be released entirely. That's how wide open things are.
I don't even remember writing that article at this point.
In Berea.
I thought it was interesting that the Akron Beacon Journal expects Deshaun Kizer to be the starting
Acro Beacro?
That would be my pick, too, to be honest. Unless he shows himself to be not ready at all. Because you have to, if you're going to go into next year's draft and you're probably going to pick a quarterback again, you've got to find a way to see. You know what Cody Kessler is. You've got to find a way to see Kizer.
And it's interesting. They're not even trying to pretend to use the first team snaps, at least so far, on Osweiler. Because they know long-term they're invested in Kessler. Even if Kessler's not starting for this team or ever, he's got a four-year contract. He could be a long-term backup. Like they're spending all their energy on the other two guys.
He could be in the league for 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
And down in Houston, Brock Osweiler's former home, DeAndre Hopkins coming off a down year with terrible quarterbacks around him. That was the case the year before as well. But things got really grim with Brock in town last year. Now there is some hope for the wide receiver who believes in both Tom Savage and first-round pick
Deshaun Watson.
Here's what Hopkins had to say on NFL Network's Inside Training Camp Live.
Very eager, very eager. You know, my whole career, I think I played with the most quarterbacks throughout any wide receiver career through my first 4 years. You know, so I never had a stability at quarterback to be able to build chemistry back-to-back years. You know, so to have two guys like that in the locker room that I know can be franchise quarterbacks, it's a great feeling.
Wow, Wes. He is certain that Tom Savage could be a franchise quarterback, or is that just lip service?
It's like Eddie Murphy in Raw when he talks about being in jail and he gets out and eats crackers and it's like the best crackers he's ever had. It's like eating a filet mignon because you've been in jail. He had Brock Osweiler last year. I'm sure Tom Savage.
You're calling Tom Savage a cracker.
No, I'm calling Brock Osweiler.
Yeah, well, let's tone down the race stuff, Wes.
Well, and Greg.
And Greg.
Greg connected those dots.
Oh, I thought Wes was being open about it, and Greg was just beginning
to call
him
out. I view
Greg
as the one who connected the dots, actually, and that's
okay.
Troubling.
Okay, I misread the situation. Then Greg, stop being racist.
That's the first time today anyone's accused me of that.
Hey, the Bills traded Cardale Jones. Sorry, Rex Ryan, that didn't work out. To the Los Angeles Chargers in exchange for a conditional draft pick. Buffalo announced it on Wednesday. I shouldn't say Rex. I should say Doug Whaley was a big Cardale Jones fan. Chris Wessling. And now Doug's gone. Rex is gone. And now Jonesy's gone too.
Well, he's going to play for his biggest fan in the NFL, Anthony Lynn, who was in Buffalo last year and raved about Cardale Jones, said this is the kind of guy you want waiting on the runway behind your starter. So
okay.
Anthony Lynn obviously believes Cardale Jones is the ideal.
Does that mean the plane is taking off without him?
Which I think probably might not be the terrible thing as well.
I think
counterpoint.
He's going to rev him up.
Well, it's clear disrespect for our boy Mike Bercovici, who,
it is.
Who hey. Wes has done extensive tape study on and thinks highly of. I don't appreciate what's happening here at all.
What's wrong with this jukebox?
Oh. That's Bercovici?
That people love trades though, and Ohio State former quarterbacks, because there was probably a lot of work being put into all the features and various things on our redesigned website yesterday. By far the most popular story on NFL.com: Bills trade Cardale Jones.
Trades
written by
needle.
Chris Wessling.
Wes moves the needle and trades move the needle, and when these things combine,
it's a hot combo.
It is explosive. Bad news for RG3, I would think, who got a workout with the Chargers and then they traded for Cardale Jones. So, sorry.
He's got a hope for some. Why are you sorry to me? I'm not
former Browns legend. That's
there's like 80 Browns former Browns quarterbacks floating through the league. I mean, RG3 needs to hope for a litany of injuries to occur under center,
and also for a career epiphany.
Help also.
Finally, in this portion of the news, Julio Jones is $100,000. Poorer? I feel like that's not accurate because he's still rich, but he's missing goods. Put it that way. He takes a jet ski out in Lake Lanier in Georgia. You familiar with Lake Lanier, Wes?
I know where it is.
A Tybee off the coast of Georgia there. Anyway, he's zipping around on his jet ski. And people are sleeping on jet skis.
Oh, stop. They're I'm obnoxious.
You want to feel free. You get out on a lake, and you go on that jet ski. You don't be, you know, you don't be a jerk about it. You don't get in people's lanes and do like Playboy moves when you're wearing your Oakleys and stuff. No, you just get out into that open water.
Jet skis are the Donald Trump of watercraft.
When is the last time you did this, Dan?
My father-in-law used to have one before he sold it. And it was the only time I truly felt free.
Interesting.
Remember little Debbie floating around?
You want to feel free, tie a huge rope around yourself or whatever is happening on jet skis.
Are you aware of what a jet ski is?
I'm just saying you're not free.
Well, you hold on to it.
Yeah, you're holding on. You're not tied.
It would never be a good idea on a moving motorboat to tie a rope around your body.
I thought you were talking about – were you thinking it was like a tube that was tied to a
boat? No, I'm thinking, you know, you're
saying – You can let go when you want. Yeah. That's freedom in essence. You can let go whenever you feel – the need.
Anyway, I'm pounding the table for jet skis. Get off my back. Whatever.
I'm surprised.
Anyway, it's nice. They're nice machines. But Julio Jones, he went into a boat wake. Major mistake. Got to be careful. Also want to decrease your acceleration when coming under an overpass situation with the bridge. There's a lot of different rules. And do not ingest alcohol. Boat police are all over the place. Anybody who has jet ski questions, come to me. Moving forward. Julio Jones. Anybody have jet ski questions?
I think you've solved our curiosity.
He gets knocked off the vessel, popped up. He was okay, thankfully. But his $100,000 earring floated to the – or sunk to the bottom of this lake. He hired two divers to search for it. No luck so far. Mm. And that's a tough way to lose a very expensive piece of jewelry. Anybody ever lose anything like super valuable in a stupid way?
Trying to think.
I lost my car for 2 days, but that was. I don't understand buying $100,000 piece of $100,000 earring.
$100,000 for a shiny object.
You better trust those divers too, because you're paying those divers, and it's just
very
like,
good point.
And the divers are coming. Nope, didn't find anything.
Not today. Meanwhile, they show up in like a Rolls Royce for day four of the search.
Like there's just like lobster dinners coming out of their car window.
We got some more news to get to, but we got to speed up. So it's time for a little bit of 8 o'clock delight. Le'Veon Bell did not show up for the opening of Pittsburgh Steelers training camp. He's playing under that franchise tag. Is this a problem, Greg?
Not at all. Be there when it matters.
All right. Devontae Booker is heading to the PUP for the Denver Broncos. He has a wrist injury suffered back in minicamp. You like Booker, Wes?
I didn't like what I saw of him last year. He was very underwhelming, and C.J. Anderson, in my opinion, was locked in as the starter.
Everson Griffin getting paid once again. The defensive end signed a 4-year, $58 million extension. That includes $34 million in guarantees, according to Rap Sheet. This means I'm a bike for life, Griffin said. Greg, you got paid again.
Yeah, it's a rare player that gets two monster contract extensions from the same team in the same career. Says a lot about how they view him.
The Jets claimed Lucky Whitehead off waivers after the Cowboys released him under controversial circumstances. Mark, did you like all of the different plays on words about the Jets finally getting lucky on Twitter?
It's an awful week on Twitter to begin with, and that might have been the height of the ugliness.
John Ross, the Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver that they're expecting a lot from this year, remains sidelined as they open training camp and is still, quote, a couple weeks away. That doesn't sound good, Mark.
I'm not worried about it yet. Should I be?
As a Browns fan or just...
As a Browns fan especially, but no, I think he, you know.
This is different than Le'Veon Bell. He doesn't know the offense.
He's literally never practiced.
NFL. He's never practiced with the Bengals.
Want to rethink this, Mark? How nervous?
I personally am not worried about it. Should the Bengals be? I think they should be. You asked my concern level. It's low.
Okay, just in general, when I ask those type of questions,
project to,
I'm putting
onto
you
the
shoes,
thoughts of the team. Okay,
the fan base, the team management, all that, the coaching staff. Anyway, who has the number one hottest selling jersey in football? There's no way you're going to guess unless you're reading the end around. James Conner, the third round pick running back out of the University of Pittsburgh, is now top Tom Brady, Chris Wessling, and Wes. Big reason why: the man overcame, beat cancer, returned to the football field, and then got drafted by his hometown team. How about you getting drafted by the Bengals after your surgery?
No thanks. I don't know. I think that's a heartwarming story, though, because in a time where this country can't seem to agree on anything and has been pretty – their vitriol has been flying. The support for people battling cancer, I mean, is almost universal, and it shows that we can come together and support someone who needs it.
Nice macro viewpoint, Wes. Finally, Philip Rivers to commute from San Diego this season. That could be an hour and a half commute each way. Finish it off, Mark. Quick.
I think it's awful. It's terrible. If I had to do that every day as a quarterback, I'd go nuts. But he's in some sort of quarterback car where you have, like, he's able to study film with a driver driving him. Still, it's an hour and a half. He lives in Rancho Santa Fe.
It's a rotten idea.
It's troubling.
Well, you have to move your whole family. They're not in L.A. They're in Costa Mesa, which is Orange County. So he's not going all the way up to L.A. You can watch some film on the way to work. That makes sense.
He's been sheltered in San Diego. Wait till he has to deal with L.A. freeway traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what else? What happens? He's admitting this is a trial balloon.
Yeah.
What happens when he cannot take it and the traffic's brutal and he doesn't like his mobile car device with all the televisions? He can't get a good internet connection. He can't get any work done. And he still doesn't want to move the kids from San Diego. Then what, Mark?
And I'm telling you, it is an absolute disaster on the family front. The Chargers will be 0-5 by the time this trial balloon sinks into the ground.
It's easy for you to say. Try to move a family with 8 kids.
Well, if you have 8 children, you've got to put
now
this
stuff
into context.
Now we're just vamping to time the end of the song, if anyone has noticed. Yeah, like, it's hard commuting in Southern California.
He's a multimillionaire, and the team will move him for him.
That's absolutely right.
Hey. That's true. The team will work with him well.
I think automobiles are a great thing.
So do I. That was 8 o'clock delight. All right. New Era's NFL training collection has a great combination of innovative performance and style with features like UV protection, moisture wicking, and cooling technology. There's no reason you shouldn't make the New Era NFL training collection a part of your daily attire. That's every day. Available at retailers like Lids, NFLShop.com, and Dick's Sporting Goods. We see you in your favorite team. Okay, now.
Can I say one thing there?
Yes.
It's using the MeUndies song for this. I love all these sponsors, but it's like you had a girlfriend, you had a song with her, and then you get a new girlfriend, you're trying to recreate the same thing. That was the MeUndies song.
I have a new outlook on the sponsors. We love our sponsors, but don't get too close. Just don't overthink it.
Is that the same outlook you have for producers?
No, there's a producer that I definitely want. And if we can procure this person, you know, we'd be very happy.
Is she in this room?
Not in this room, no.
Is she behind the glass?
I will say nothing else. But very talented. A lot of talented people in this building.
A vicious coup d'etat will take place.
All right, now. How you doing, by the way, Emma? Unrelated.
Oh, I'm doing really well. It's a good show so far.
Is it fun? Is it kind of loose in terms of how it's like, it's almost like hanging out with your friends?
Yeah, just my pals, hanging out with the guys.
Yeah, it's almost not work in a way.
Right.
Yeah.
Very rewarding also on all fronts.
Yeah. Make some good points.
A lot of good points. Did you notice when I mean, said...
Yeah, it doesn't feel like work when it's fun.
Yeah. You're right. I think Emma's picking up on the same thing. Did you notice, Emma, when I sent out the budget for today's show, really nice headshot of you that I dug up on Google?
Yeah.
Just show my appreciation that you're working with us today.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Slightly embarrassing headshot, but...
I think you look nice. Did you get my fruit basket?
No.
No.
Okay. Still waiting on that.
Okay. Hot butt talk. Yep. It's never too soon to talk about a hot butt, especially in the NFL, where ask Jeff Fisher, who's, you know, began the 2016 season coaching the Los Angeles football franchise, and he ended it holding a puppy and a woman he picked up at the supermarket just to be his friend, a mom of some kind.
Well, that's
waving,
waving
at the team bus as it rolled away to Seattle for another slaughter fest.
I want the video of, like, you know, Alec Ogletree or what, some of the players being like, wait a second, is that Jeff? What is he doing there? Like, I want the cameras that have that.
How about the guys that weren't paying attention in the meeting and had no idea Jeff Fisher was fired? And then they see him waving? Probably a bit of a trip. Anyway. Hot butts. All right, we're going to go around the room a couple times. And... talk about coaches, GMs, what have you, that could find themselves in legitimate danger of losing their jobs. This is Greg jokes around about, like, he doesn't like the sound of a burning butt. He jokes about that, but the other thing Greg doesn't like, he gets uncomfortable whenever feels like we might be talking about these people losing jobs in a way that's too flippant. Greg is very respectful. He's moving his way up the ladder. And once you go to the TV side, you become a lot more kind of straight-laced with that stuff. And that's why Greg is kind of caught in this in-between man without a country place, right?
Didn't now. That's not true at all. Weren't we just talking last episode about how sort of like it humanized the person, like, you know, Rob Boris or whatever, that you realize, yeah, like, you know, these are people with issues. It's not so much I'm uncomfortable. It's also, you know, right before training camp starts we're talking hot butts. It's like the season hasn't even started and we're trying to fire.
But how many coaches were fired last year? There are a few, right?
It's been an average of 6 a year, I believe, lately.
But even in season, there's always a couple, at least, I feel like.
One or two, usually.
We're going to talk about – we're not saying all these coaches, we expect them to be fired, but there is a decent chance, one to three of these names actually will get banged in the end.
Do they have to be coaches?
No.
Okay.
No. You go anywhere you want, Wes.
I'm going to Mark's corner.
Ooh, you're flying. Okay. Mark, you okay with him going to your corner?
Absolutely.
All right, let's start with Mark, though, on this.
Okay, I don't even know what it – I thought he had the fantasy corner.
This is a different corner he has.
Is it coordinator corner?
This is Mark's caddy corner.
Health food?
I cannot wait to find out what corner this is.
All right, let's hurry up and get to Wes. We'll start with Mark, though.
Oh, I'll go real quick then. No, but I look at Chicago because I think with John Fox and Ryan Pace, you can act all you want about how, you know, John Fox says he loves what he has with his team right now. I think that this year – you see what you get out of the Bears, but if Mitch Trubisky is going to be your starter next year, then you have to rethink entirely how this team runs itself. And John Fox is not the guy I want to groom a rookie quarterback or anyone on his staff, frankly. I honestly think that the Bears could finish about 3-13 or 4-12 this year. I don't think that Pace and John Fox are necessarily best buds on any level either after what happened with the draft and just whispers coming out of the draft that there's unrest on that team. And John Fox is not going to be the best candidate out there if a few really great other options come up at this point. So I think Chicago is going to have a major reshuffling by the end of the season.
He left himself without...
I did not wish that to happen to John Fox.
Right. No, not flippant at all.
He left himself without any excuses whatsoever when he said how strong he believes his roster is. That means he believes Ryan Pace did his job.
Yeah, the whole John Fox thing is like, I'm going to take your lack of talent and we're going to play hard and we're going to overachieve even if we're not the greatest team in the world. So if he doesn't deliver that, I think you're right. I think if we were in, you know, a city in the desert where your consigliere friend Wes works.
Mr. Rack.
I would guess. I don't know if they have things like this, but I would say John Fox has got to be the most likely guy to not have his job next year. He would be on the top of the list.
Mark hit a home run.
That's a good choice.
Hey, Mark, way to get going, baby. Maybe not a daring choice, but the one that if you didn't bring it up.
I wanted to get on base.
Yeah, you did more than that. You went all the way around the bases. Just like Greg in the bottom of the seventh tonight in the finals.
I want that.
Strike three, you're out.
Wes?
We're going to coordinator caddy corner.
I knew it. I knew it was coordinator.
Like it.
Go ahead.
This guy just entered the league, and he's already on the hot seat. Steve Sarkisian, the Falcons offensive coordinator. Seat could not be any hotter. They are loaded with talent. But Kyle Shanahan maximized that talent. Nobody gets receivers more open, more consistently than Kyle Shanahan. We saw that last year. Can Steve Sarkisian draw up plays? Can he dial in the offense? Does he know the right combination? Can he work with Matt Ryan? Can he work with the receivers? Can he use the same zone running scheme to the same effect as Kyle Shanahan? I think he's under the microscope as much as anyone this year.
It's a great call. I mean, can he be a good pro coach? I think if he was a head coach, everyone would say this guy doesn't have any pro experience at all, and that would be a legitimate claim, and yet it's just as important for a coordinator, especially under a defensive coach, where he's basically running that side.
And there are coordinators, offensive coordinators, that are great at game planning the week going into the game. And then there are in-game masters like Shanahan. And to have suddenly switched to someone with no pro play calling experience in tough situations, I mean, this is a tough call to take over the best offense. I honestly wonder if there's a scenario by the end of the year where people saying Atlanta's defense has gotten them farther this year than their offense if things don't go right.
And
making the leaps, Atlanta Falcons.
That's
defense.
Right.
How about that?
That's true. And you know what? Like, Mark, you were kind of hitting on it there, and it goes all walks of life. You never want to replace the guy. You want to replace the guy who replaced the guy. So if something goes wrong with the Falcons this year, and there is that Super Bowl hangover, and the defense doesn't make the leap, and the offense comes down to earth, and they go 8-8 in their new building, and everyone's bitterly disappointed, and they're not going to fire the head coach. They like the head coach a lot. I could see the O coordinator going, especially if he rubs some people the wrong way, which it seems like he does. Didn't he get, like, I don't know anything about college football. I tend to watch the Final Four, but didn't he get, like, benched in the championship game calling plays? Did he take
I thought Lane Kiffin took over or something.
Yeah, he essentially, I don't know, it was confusing whether he lost the job or whether he was already, his loyalties were divided, so they just decided to move on, or they were annoyed how he handled moving on to Atlanta. So, yes, he did get benched, essentially.
Yeah, something bad happened. Anyway, I think that's a good one, 2 for 2. Moving on. Greg, I hope I'm not stepping on your toes here, because I know you like to cover this beat, considering your college roots. But I want to talk about Sean Payton. Did I step on you?
No.
Okay, good. And, Greg, Mark, I know the Loomis and the structure of the Saints are on your radar, and as they should be. Their loyalties seem to be divided between the Pelicans.
Oh,
didn't they do something recently,
too? Joint press conference about the Saints and the Pelicans.
Yeah, Saints-Pelicans press conference. They're trying to save money on refreshments and, you know, cookies that you provide at the press conference. Let's just do Pelicans and Saints together.
I don't know if they're going to win a Super Bowl until they
got a Ricky Dink operation where they run.
Yeah, we're going to see Drew Brees playing point guard in January this year. But I think at a certain point, it's just time, right? And Peyton's been there since 2006. That is a long-ass time in the NFL to be anywhere. And you win a Super Bowl, and that gives you a lot of rope. But that Super Bowl is 2009, and it is now 2017, and we have a lot of fun with Jeff Fisher. But guess who's gone 7-9 the last 3 years and 4 out of the last 5? It's Sean Payton. So if they do that again and regress further, you get the feeling it could be a situation where both sides want a fresh start, because you're spinning your wheels, and ownership has to be getting very anxious at this point. Sean Payton knows his quarterback's not getting any younger, and he's not getting any closer, and maybe he thinks there's a better job with a brighter future ahead. I think another bad year by the Saints, especially one that goes off the rails a little bit in the first half or something like that, and we could see a change. Maybe not in season, but something that we could see a change.
Someone help me! I'm still alive, only I'm very badly burned!
It's respectful.
That's not respectful. Sean Payton, I think that all makes sense in most situations, but then I think of who's the owner, what's the team. He is signed through 2020, making more than, I think, $8 million a year. He famously brought that contract in a briefcase to the Senior Bowl.
Well, it was the owner's meeting.
He was prancing
around with this like leather case, and finally announced that his unsigned contract.
Right. So I think Sean Payton's been a great coach for them and great for that city, but I think it's been really underhanded how he's been looking for other jobs at the end of each of the last two seasons, and he throws reporters under the bus, but we know what he's doing. There's these reports out there. He's sniffing around. At this point, I don't think he can get another team to be paying him that much money. So it starts getting confused. Like, I don't think another team's going to trade for it. It's just this weird stare down where I just think they're stuck together.
I think if you're the Saints, you have to have a candidate out there that you believe is instantly better than Sean Payton, which is not Sean Payton. Right. What he's good at, the Saints are good at.
Well, it's interesting, too, because Drew Brees' contract is up, too, and maybe Sean Payton and Drew Brees are just a package deal at this point, whereas if Drew Brees moves on, maybe that's the end of Sean Payton there. I don't know.
I don't want to step on anybody's toes if you have a banger for this, but there's been many years where Payton's been connected to the Cowboys. I wonder if there's a possibility a job opening could happen there if the Cowboys really disappoint this year.
And Garrett going to New Orleans, you could see them flipping, potentially.
All right. Greg?
Talk about the Indianapolis Colts. Whenever a new GM comes in that makes a lot of changes, generally the head coach losing his job is not too far behind. I think Chuck Pagano is in a really tough spot here. Chris Ballard, of course, got this job after they had already decided to keep Pagano. I think they obviously want to make it work, but he's a defensive coach who's never had a particularly good defense, and they could have 8 or 9 or even 10 new starters on defense, And if that defense doesn't get better in a hurry, I think Demersay and Ballard could look for a guy that they could choose together anew.
And Irsay, over and over this offseason, has verbally praised Ballard. He really feels like he hit a home run with his GM pick. So if there isn't any sort of an issue where the Colts feel like Andrew Luck's career is washing away before our eyes, we need to get someone in here that can maximize this offense, that I think he's in hot. Pagano would be in big hot water.
He's been given a long enough leash.
Right.
What's your favorite type of frog?
That's one of Chris Ballard's, you know, favorite questions to ask.
People keep on, I see on the subreddit, like, what is that all about? I don't know. Maybe you just had to be there. I can't tell you. Some of these things, there's no hard and fast answer. Maybe Greg has it, but I don't.
No, I think you said it well.
It's interesting that you both reached the same conclusion, though, but you can't put your finger on what it is exactly.
I still remember it. We watched at the Combine. We watched Ballard's first press conference, and we made the walk, the cold walk in Indianapolis, the cold, rainy walk that day, from the little interview center back to, like, our stations, and we both just walking on that Indy street and be like, what's going on there? Anyway, want to move on?
I think we should.
All right, one more round. Let's go, Mark.
Similar situation in Detroit, where I think if you're Jim Caldwell and you're paired with Bob Quinn, who's, you know, really respected inside that building, general manager who probably wants at some point to have his pick of head coach if the Lions crashed and burned, which I don't think is beyond the realm of imagination that they, you know, go 6-10 or something.
Wow, they just got two more wins than you predicted at the beginning of the show.
That's my ceiling for them.
Trending in the right direction.
Ceiling.
Jim Caldwell. I mean, Jim Caldwell is someone that I think, I'm surprised that he was given a chance to come back as coach last season. And so I don't know if this is going to continue on unless they really overachieve. And that really overachieving and Jim Caldwell are not two things that I often pair together in my mind.
Don't you think he overachieved last year? I felt like he did. He made the playoffs with smoke and mirrors.
By the way,
I just don't think that – I think if you're Bob Quinn and you're really looking at what your team was, it's not on Jim Caldwell, but your team has a long way to go. And is Jim Caldwell the guy you want to sign up to go through this journey with?
Nothing exciting about Jim Caldwell. I think it's a good choice, Mark. Both your choices, it's kind of like choked up on the bat a little bit and just slapped singles, maybe beat it out for double. Very safe, but also
just trying
ones.
To be productive today.
Yeah, very good. Both of them. I will say productive. This. And I should have had the Lions higher up in the pain rankings. I understand that now. One playoff win since 1958. Now, did they win a playoff game in Caldwell's 3 years? No, but they've been to the playoffs twice. And I know they backed in last year, but they went 11-5 in his first year and should have beat the Cowboys.
Yes, they should.
They got robbed in that game. So he could have been in the divisional playoffs.
That's the best Lions team in a long time.
I will just say, I think for me, it's the hand-picked GM to come in and wanting his own coach to pair with. Maybe that would be Matt Patricia. Maybe that would be someone from his past that he really wants to – you know, build a legacy with
Josh
Detroit.
McDaniels.
Doesn't it feel like, though, Caldwell, everyone, the instant the hire was made, hated it. And on some level, he's overperformed to this point.
He's 27-21
in
as the coach of the Lions.
In this scenario, though, they have a disastrous season.
Okay. 4-6 wins. I got it. I'm with you.
They go 9-7. I don't think this comes true.
Wes?
Well, I wanted to go quarterback, and a couple of veterans immediately jumped to mind. Alex Smith and Eli Manning are on the hot seat. But I think the hottest seat among all quarterbacks belongs to Blake Bortles. And Doug Marrone said the other day, we are raising expectations for this guy, which, you know, if that's the case, why didn't you bring in someone to compete with him if you're raising expectations? But I know the Titans are now the default pick in that division. The Jaguars and Texans have playoff rosters. With the exception of the quarterback. I think the Jaguars' roster is now pretty loaded. And if Leonard Fournette is what we think he is, this team can go pretty far if Blake Bortles is an average quarterback. But if he's not even average, if he can't fix his mechanics, I mean, basically they'll have to write him off like they wrote off Blaine Gabbert.
How about I think that's definitely fair. How about the Jaguars in general? From the quarterback to the current coach to the GM, a potential total sweep out and it's all kind of on Bortles improving in a lot of ways.
Under Coughlin, though, you're saying he would remain.
Right. That Coughlin is essentially, you know, cooking the flames here for an entire organization that's been given a long rope. with a total lack of success. I mean, no team has lost more games over the last 5 years except for the Browns.
Is that true?
It's true.
Wow. Why is that shocking? I mean, it seems like that would be the team that would have lost more games.
Don't they go 4-12 every year?
Right, yeah. That's the thing. They have not had a 6-win season, I don't believe, since the second to last Jack Del Rio year.
What?
That's crazy.
And that's a horrible season.
That's off the top of my head. I got
the NFL. It's rigged so the bad teams can get better every year.
I mean, 6 wins should not be that high a bar.
Let's look.
Yeah, I'm right. They're 8-8 in 2010 under Del Rio. And since then they've won 5-2, 4-3, 5-3.
That's hideous.
Well,
that's bad.
The last head coach when he got fired, Gus Bradley, there was that famous stat that Bill Belichick would have to lose like 100 straight games to equal his losing percentage. Bradley's
losing percentage. It was like 250.
It was probably more than that, whatever it was. I will go with a team that some people will stay in the AFC South.
This is an ugly page. I don't want to interrupt. Yeah. But there were two straight seasons where their leading passer was Chad Henne and their leading receiver was Cecil Shorts. I mean, that's just.
It's bad.
Sorry. It's just bad.
Save for the Jaguars suck podcast. I'll stay in the AFC South. Talk about Bill O'Brien.
Wow.
Who a lot of people, and I think it's fair to say, he's had his issues managing the quarterback room. But it's kind of a chicken salad. Chicken S. Making chicken salad out of chicken S.
Yes.
He's not been put in a position to have a quarterback to believe in at this point. Maybe he does this year, but it's still a rookie quarterback. And I will point to maybe we forget now, or the football cognoscenti has forgotten. But there was speculation that Bill O'Brien was leaving Houston last season because of some internal squabbles. What happens this year if Tom Savage, I'm sorry, DeAndre Hopkins, isn't a franchise-type quarterback? In fact, if Tom Savage stinks, which I think everybody thinks could happen potentially, and if Deshaun Watson simply isn't ready, and then you have ownership that is not prepared to wait, ownership that still thinks it's a team that's one heartbeat away. Well, that would mean someone died. Ownership that thinks that they are just one wave of success, something turning their way from being able to go toe-to-toe with the Patriots. I believe there is an issue going on between the coach and the front office there. And if this team underperforms, I think O'Brien, he's kind of a volatile guy. I gained respect from him watching Hard Knocks, but I think he's a guy that probably rubs some people the wrong way and could see him getting into some spirited arguments in a big spot. I think O'Brien could be in deep trouble if this team underperforms, which I think is very possible.
Hmm. Only thing I'd say is he's won 27 regular season games in 3 years with Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, and Brock Osweiler. Now, he also famously called some of those quarterbacks completely competent and ready to be their starters, and they shouldn't be disrespected. But I think the overall product under O'Brien has been solid.
Well, I think he's been great, but there were multiple reports at the end of last season that he would either quit or get fired.
The GM so bulletproof in Houston?
I think it was about, and I remember that report, it was from Ian Rappaport, who really started it, our NFL Network insider, who said coach needy teams are waiting to see what happens with Bill O'Brien. And it sure felt like it was Bill O'Brien that was maybe thinking about trying to push his way out. So, yeah, something's weird there.
One more interesting thing about this situation is they finished 29th in Football Outsiders metrics last year. They were one of the worst teams in the league according to statistical analysis. And that same analysis predicts them to fall off in a major way this year because they were so lucky in close games. And yet people like Ian Rappaport, other NFL insiders, when they talk to their coaches, when they talk to their players, they believe this is the most stacked team Bill O'Brien's had. Mm. They think they are loaded this year. They think they're playoff bound and a Super Bowl contender. So
defense looks great on paper.
The expectations are really high among that coaching staff,
which can work against you.
Yeah.
If you don't match those expectations. J.J. Watt being fully healthy, Clowney coming into his own, and if Watson can play a little bit or Savage, they can win 11 games, but it could also go the other
way. Give us one season, football gods. I'm usually not too huge on the Texans, but give us one season where we get healthy prime J.J. Watt and healthy prime Clowney next to each other for
scary.
One season. Mm. We're running out of time. Let's do it.
Tom Brady shivering in the corner just thinking about it. Ooh, I would love that. Sobbing Tom Brady in his
he's got his
sleep pajamas.
I don't think that this scenario is happening at all.
He just turned into Brock Osweiler after an incompletion.
Okay.
I can't believe it.
That would be Tom Brady if Clowney and Watt got on the same page of dominance. Take us home, Greg.
I was looking for a surprise team. How about the nation's capital, the Washington Redskins? When things blow up there, they tend to blow up fast. And I don't think Jay Gruden should be on any sort of hot seat. But this is a team I could see going sideways if things don't go right, and that I could see ownership making a rash move. I could see drama during the season, which puts various pressures on different factions of the team. I don't like the smell of it with Cousins and everything else. We've just seen this over the last 20 years, so that's, I'm basing it more on that history than Jay Gruden, because I think Jay Gruden's doing a great job.
Hello there. Anyone? Could someone call an ambulance? I can quite... a lot of pain.
Is Bruce Allen on the hot seat?
No. I feel like Bruce Allen is the one, he's the one putting people on the hot seat. He seems to have the ear of ownership. He seems to be running things.
How's that working?
Well, any return to power.
Right.
I think that that probably doesn't bode well great for the head coach. I don't know how we got out of here without talking the Jets, but I think that's too obvious.
I thought about the Jets. I just figured, well, we talk about them a lot. And
if they will be, everyone will be swept out if they go, 1-15 or whatever.
Isn't that the plan though? According to some, I mean,
although
maybe that's why they're not even, they're just the Jets right now.
Yeah,
Wes.
What?
No, sorry.
Like Wes was saying, why? They're basically almost a relegated team right now. So I don't want to have to bring them up all the time. It's just they're a depressing team to talk about.
Couldn't agree more.
Wes, you asked if Bruce Allen would be on the hot seat. That did remind me. Bruce Allen and John Gruden got fired together in a very surprising move when they collapsed late in John Gruden's last season. So who knows? Maybe Allen and Gruden could get swept out if something like that happened.
Since you brought up my team, Mark, not being aggressive with you at all, but
right.
If Hugh Jackson follows up the 1-15 – with a 3-13?
Yeah, I think
it's still going to be patience as the order of the day?
No, because going through that again with any one of these bad teams, it's fine to say, there's all this patience in August or July, but if you go through that again, Hugh Jackson could decide to leave.
He got a total,
The front office could go through a major shakeup. I mean, anything is possible.
Style points matter for them, though. They could go 4-12, and it could be the type of 4-12 where people would feel good. It's a step forward. There's progress. Like, you can see certain young players developing. 4-12 might be totally fine, I think, for them.
Depends on the owner. Some owners are really patient. Mike Brown being the most patient owner in the NFL. Jimmy Haslin's been known to fire guys left and right.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Good hot butt talk, guys. We will be back, like we said, back to 3 times a week. So next show is on Monday. Emma, will you be with us on Monday as well?
I will not. Sully will be back.
Okay. But unless you want it.
Right.
Do the Monday show. Just.
I would love to do the Monday show, but.
Yeah.
Sully's going to be back.
Got
it.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll be back 3 shows next week. We had been doing a Tuesday video show. That Tuesday video show is now Wednesday. So you'll get a pod Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the next 4 weeks, basically 5 weeks through training camp and up to the start of the regular season. And then, of course, once the season starts, you get your Sunday night show, the flagship program here at the podcast, and maybe some big surprises in store down the line after that. But I don't want to say anything yet. Don't want to say anything. Getting excited. Some good things happening behind the scenes. That's all I want to say.
Wow.
That's new.
A little bit of bzzz. But, oh, wait. Bloop. And I ain't talking Evan Silva.
Big fish?
That was
big fish.
There was a gross couple seconds there in your sound effects that I don't want to hear again.
Bloop.
No.
Yeah, Dan hasn't informed us yet that he's replacing the 3 of us with right. Nate Burleson,
right.
Dan Helly, and Lindsay Rose.
Amazing
what
buzz.
A team.
Amazing buzz.
Did you see my email? My personal email? I've only taken this Gmail because it's so exclusive. Anyway, no. Good things for all of us.
Triple sourced?
Every time, baby. Every time. All right. Here we go. Let's go home. Thank you, Emma. You're the best.
Thank you, guys.
You're seriously the best. Stan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and Emma VP behind the glass. Till Monday.